grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Pat and Michael, too, are going to talk comic books with you.
Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast, where a couple of comic rookies, Michael and Pat, try to comprehend the world of comic books and comic-related pop culture with the help of Joe, who's just a casual comics guy.
So let's just get started. Welcome back, everybody, to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, guys.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, today we're back. We've got Michael and Jeff here today to talk to us about DC Future State. We picked up some Future State comic books this week. And do you guys know anything about Future State? They had a little blurb at the beginning of a couple of comic books.
They had it was at the beginning of every single one of them, and I had questions already because it was talking about from the ashes of death metal.
Right. I will give a quick intro onto what I know about these things. So, you know, we've talked about comics having big crossover events where they cross multiple titles. Marvel's doing the one now we were reading, King in Black, which is a lot of the different heroes all involved in one thing. Dark Knight's death metal was a big event with DC, and I don't know exactly what it all was. It seemed very dark. I mean, I take that from the title, Dark Knight's Death Metal. But at the end of it, it had something to do with Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen, and there was a whole multiverse they were trying to reshape, and this is probably why Ryan did not want to record.
He was like, oh my gosh, I need to get so educated and explain all this complexity to these fools.
Well, and as Ryan mentioned, comic book collecting or just reading comic books can be an expensive hobby. And I have no idea how much you would have had to pay if you wanted to read the whole Dark Knight's death metal deal. But springing out of that, where there was a whole multiverse, and I mean, even keeping up, there's like the Batman Who Laughs. I have no idea what that means. That's a character now. New Apocalypse, The Dark Father. I'm like just reading the entry here on DC's website. I'm like, I would not have been able. Jeff, there's a dude named Batmage. Like some
Batmage?
Batmage.
Wow. I'm coming up absolute zeros on that one. But the Batman Who Laughs thing, I could tell you a little something there.
Oh, well, tell us about the Batman Who Laughs.
I don't know anything about the actual comic itself, but the Joker is said to be in part inspired by a character from an old silent movie called The Man Who Laughs.
Okay.
And it was, that's all I know. That's it.
I think in the characters, there's some
it's more than us.
I think in the comics, there's some character who's like an anti-hero that's a cross between the Batman and Joker.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. So DC's got this whole multiverse going on. And I'm looking up now the page for Batmage. He comes from their dark part of their multiverse. And he is an evil sorcerer and was appointed by the Batman Who Laughs to watch over Wonder Woman's reign of hell.
Nice. That's not Batmite, right?
No, Batmite is much better. Do you want to tell Michael about Batmite? He's my favorite.
Oh my gosh, this is so windy. Like, so windy. How many bat creatures can we have?
Batmite is an imp from which dimension?
Fifth dimension?
Something like that. The same place that
Mr. Mitzplix is from.
The same place that he's from. Okay, you look like you have no idea who.
Yeah,
that
you
is
guys.
Either.
I honestly, in my notes this week, at one point, I wrote down reading this comic feels like what it would be like to take acid if I knew what taking acid felt like.
Well, let's rewind and we'll confuse Michael and the rest of the listeners later. So there's this whole thing called Dark Knight's death metal, and at the end of it, apparently something good happens because all the heroes maybe win, I guess. But this is a sequel to Dark Knight's death metal, and as they talk about at the beginning of each of these comics, it has like whatever the heroes did in that has inspired new possibilities in the future for it says here, possible unwritten worlds of tomorrow. So I thought we could read this because it should be, if it is possible unwritten futures of a tomorrow world, none of these characters should be familiar to anybody at all. And so maybe let's read about these characters and see what they're doing. And that is the Future State. And Future State is going to be 24 different titles. So if you want to know why Ryan's not trying to keep up with Future State, it's going to be 24 different titles, not 24 different books, 24 different titles. Each of those titles having multiple books. So if you want to read this and you're talking like $5 a comic just to pick up each series, you're at 25 times five. I'm not great at math. That's like 125. you're probably like several hundred bucks in if you want to read all of these comics, which seems a little much.
So kids, buy them and trade them with your friends.
Yeah, seriously. Well, that first one that we're reading, the Batman one, it was actually like $7 or $8. So could be even worse.
Yeah, that's, I think, because it was more of like a double issue.
Yeah, it had a lot in the back, but I wasn't really sure what was going on. It seemed like the intro to a whole bunch of other things that I didn't understand.
Yeah. Well, you had two separate stories plus a little featurette too. So I think that's why that one was higher.
Well, let's talk about the three that we read for this week. Future State Wonder Woman, Future State The Next Batman, and Future State The Flash. So which of these three did you each like best?
I think I actually liked the Wonder Woman one the best. I thought that one was kind of funny. The other two were kind of dark, and there was, I mean, not that dark is problematic. I see the merits there, but it was quirky. Like, it had more sort of funny lines in it, and it was still sort of mythological. I don't know. I like that one the best.
Sure. I agree with you on that. The Batman was, well, that was the more quirky and fun. I thought Flash was the most traditional.
Yeah.
And Batman was an interesting new direction.
I agree. I think the Batman one actually had some interesting sort of parallels with some things that happened in the world, right? So it felt kind of dark and relatable in some ways. Right. So
Jeff, let's start with Future State The Flash, because you called that one out as being sort of the most traditional. And if I'm understanding the timeline of Future Comics, they take place anywhere from the year 2025 all the way to the year 4500, depending on which comic you
read. Wow.
And I think Flash is in that early the 2025 state.
Right.
So you're the you know, the out of the three of us, the Flash aficionado, the Flash dude, the Scarlet Speedster. How many names did we decide there were for the Flash?
Oh, 152.
Okay, 152. Yeah. One for each version of the Flash that has ever existed in the multiverse, I think. Or everybody who's ever had the Speed Force, right?
Right.
So, you know, Jeff, why don't you, you know, kick us off with a little synopsis and recap of where and who the Flashes are and what's happening in this book.
Well, you're going to have to help me on this a little bit.
Okay.
You've got your typical Barry Allen Flash.
Right.
You've got Jay Garrick. You've got Max Mercury. And then you've got a lady who's in a purple outfit that I don't think I've ever encountered before.
There's an Avery and there's an Iris.
Well, Iris is Iris West. That's Barry's wife.
Okay. Was it Avery then?
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with that character.
There is an Avery, and I will find out more about her as we are talking about this book.
Yeah.
But
and then you also get appearances from another Bart,
too. Yeah, Bart.
You get Bart Allen. You also have appearances from Wally West and Wallace West.
Now, I knew about Wally West, because Wally West, as I understand the DC universe right now, has just been sort of a punching bag for like the last 5 years. He's always doing really, really crappy stuff, and everybody hates Wally West.
Okay,
which makes sense in this book, in the context of this book, which we'll get. But who is Wallace West?
Well, I'm less an actual comic book reader as I am a superhero media consumer. The TV shows, the movies, that's kind of where I come from. The closest thing analog to that would be the Kid Flash from the Flash TV show.
And wait, but isn't that Wally West?
So Wallace is a cousin of Wally West.
He's different in every different iteration.
Okay. Like, in this one, they call him his cousin. And because I definitely wouldn't have hearkened on that from my own knowledge.
Man, how mad would you be if you named your kid Wally and your sister named her kid Wallace? Because that's what's going on here. It sounds
I have a cousin, Michael. I don't think it's that weird.
Okay. Got it. Is it a guy or a girl?
It's a guy.
Okay. So there's a little difference.
I'm a lot difference, yes.
So Avery, as I'm understanding it here, is Avery Ho of Prime Earth. She is the Flash of China and is a member of the Justice League of China.
Oh.
So fascinating. I did not know there was a Justice League of China.
I did not know that either.
Well, why wouldn't there be, though? I mean.
Well, of course. There should be a Justice League on every continent, really.
Canada, though?
That's part of North America.
Okay. Australia? Yeah. Justice League Australia.
All right, that would be all kinds of badass.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. Think of the accents.
This will be a quiz for us next time. Next time, I will look up and prepare a quiz for us, and then we'll get back to the comics right now, of I'm going to tell you some real Justice League members from around the world in different countries, and I'll make some up. You can tell me which ones I made up and which ones are real. But back to this, Wally West has just been a bad guy in DC Comics for a long time. He's like super evil. And so when this comic kicks off, like you said, a lot of the speedsters, they've lost their access to the Speed Force. And you think that's a pretty traditional story, Jeff?
I thought it was a traditional story in the sense that they were going with established long-term characters that look fairly recognizable.
Got it.
As far as them losing all their powers, okay, sure. Let's see what happens there.
And what did they do?
It looks like they've fallen back on the weapons of the Rogues Gallery.
Right. So, Michael, we talked about the Rogues Gallery back in episode when we talked about Superman and Flash racing, and then we talked about the Flash's Rogues Gallery. So, at the outset of this comic, the Flashes, who no longer have the Speed Force, have been, it looks like, looting their villains, the Rogues Gallery, mm-hmm. all of their stuff, like Captain Cold, Mirror Master, whoever this rainbow dude is. I never heard of the rainbow guy.
What was that? There was this weird, like, Lucky Charms rainbow, you know, platform that was just, like, going all over the pages.
Now, isn't that the on the TV show, it was Leonard Snart's sister, wasn't it?
I don't know. It says Rainbow Raider is the name of the character. Oh, and no. He took Rainbow Raider's Prisma goggles. Which is the thing you have.
I think this is the part where I wrote down acid.
Yeah. Try getting those at Pearl Vision.
But Wally West has been like possessed by some evil, like one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and is now like killing all the Flashes.
Famine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
he's sapping all their powers.
Well, it did make it like the one scene where they finally get to Wally West. They show this guy and he's like got all these muscles and he has a big giant cobra snake tattoo on his chest. And then you see Wally West's character like put his hands on him and it just drains the life force out of this like big beastie man and makes him kind of gaunt and gray and sort of skeletal. So I did think that illustration was pretty cool.
Yeah. Not before chopping his arm off first.
Oh, yeah. Right. There's that.
So
and decapitating another guy. That was really
good. Yeah, it was really? Pretty gory for like the Flash, from what I know of the Flash, right? It's usually sort of wholesome. Definitely lots of death.
The tone of this book kind of surprised me because the last Flash book I read was one that we all read, Terminal Velocity, where even when it was a bit more stakes, I never thought of the Flash as being this dark and like this level of he's like Wally West is just flat out murdering people all over.
Well,
like,
brutally. But he's not. It's the demon that's possessing him that's doing it.
Oh, okay. That's like when Hal Jordan was straight up murdering people. And guess what it was? A thing possessing him that was making him do it all. Which is why, Michael, there is a great Justice League series we should read where it's revealed Batman has like scoured and found ways to take down every member of the Justice League just in case. He's like, well, it seems like every couple months somebody's getting possessed or something like that. So.
Gotta find all their weaknesses. Right. Hey, it's smart thinking.
Unfortunately, in this comic series, all of that fell into the hands of some nefarious villain who's using it to take out the Justice League. And they find out, oh, wait, it's Batman's plans that are taking us all out.
Yeah.
Oh, backfire. And
they're not happy with it, to say the least.
Oh, hey, dude, while we were all just hanging out here at the Justice League, you know, having dinner together, you were like keeping secret files on all of us. He's like, I'm Batman. That's what I do.
Couple of kryptonite bullets stashed away. No big deal.
Right. So,
well, it's in his nature, right? The world's greatest detective. I mean,
he's also the world's most paranoid, dark
pre-planner.
He's had a rough life. It makes sense.
He has trust issues.
I mean, don't we all?
I guess. I mean, if you see the Flash straight up just killing dudes and decapitating him, you'd be like, man, I
mess you up.
You'd be like, you laughed at me then, but now who are you calling?
Yeah, but the thing is, you'd never see it. It goes so fast.
That's true. You wouldn't see it coming. You know, I did think that there, even though this one was kind of dark, there were some parts of it were just like phenomenally silly. Like the way that they got to Wally West was by all putting on one of those caps.
It's very
thinker hat.
So like Barry fashions thinker caps for all of the different people. Like there's so many, Jay and Bart and everybody. Yeah. And they're sitting on the couch in the living room at Iris's house with these caps on. And then they are entering the psychic plane where they're able to connect with Wally's like speed force and figure out whether or not Wally's really been hijacked by another, you know, bad character. So there was some silliness too. So even in that way, it was kind of traditional, to your point, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a near future story. It was definitely interesting. Ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. This one, the art though, was kind of like, I wasn't, you know, this one. So I should actually give credits on these. We're going through them, which on Flash and its Death Race Part One, Brandon Vietti is the writer and Dale Eaglesham is the artist. And it just wasn't doing it for me. It's like everybody's bodies are contorted in weird ways. And I wasn't feeling the art on this one. What about you guys?
The art felt a little, I hate to say generic because the guy worked really hard making this stuff, but there was nothing aside from the difference between the person being there in the flesh and the spectral version of them. Mm-hmm. I wasn't seeing anything necessarily special about the artwork.
Yeah. And when they were hanging around in the apartment getting ready to put those things on, even though the guys were just sitting around wearing like dress shirts, they had like, I was like, dude, did you buy your dress shirt like three sizes too small on purpose? Those aren't even your costumes. A little snug there.
I didn't mind that. That was okay for me. But I did think it was very colorful. Of the ones we read, the other two were definitely very, very dark and not a lot of like vibrant colors.
I guess, I mean, you read it on
maybe
your
it
phone,
was the right? Rainbows. I don't know.
But also you read it on your phone, right?
Correct.
I don't know how you do that. That still bugs me.
I mean, we got to just get past this, Joe. I feel like you are really butthurt about me reading comic books on my phone. But yeah, it was colorful. So
I read them on my Kindle Fire.
Were they colorful on your?
Yeah, they were great. And the Comixology feature that has the guided viewing.
Uh-huh. That's what I use.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Because sometimes when they have the big, huge, full-page splash panels,
I don't know
I'm not
where
exactly
your eyes
sure.
should go. Yeah.
Yeah. What order does this all happen in? No. They take care of that for you.
Well, they make it dummy-proof.
Well,
I like it.
I will encourage you to pop them up if you can and look, because I felt the colors were washed out compared to the other books we read. Just for as a point of reference, I'm saying compared to the other books we read. Speaking of the other books we read, maybe we should talk about those too. I don't know where I want to go next. We'll go in chronological order. So if the Flash was 2025, as I understand it, the next Batman is somewhere around 2027. So this is future state next Batman. And this was the one that I thought, even though it was dark, there was a ton of interesting primary colors and the art. So let me go back. I promised I was going to talk about this. This is the next Batman, written by John Ridley, art by Nick Darrington, and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. Bonvillain.
That's a cool name. I like that.
She sounds like a Bond villain.
In a comic book. Yeah.
Tamara Doctor No.
Exactly.
Tamara Oddjob.
This was one that the coloring really, before we get into the story, the coloring really struck me as, because a lot of primary colors, and even though sort of a very flat with not detailed backgrounds, I felt like there was some thick ink lines and it really helped like the characters pop off the page, especially Batman, like where they've got him surrounded and flashlights on him and like, mm-hmm. he's in this like spotlight. You know, Batman's a character that thrives on shadows in the art. So, this was the one that really, like, when I opened it up, I was like, my eyes popped out at the way this was colored. So maybe it's the coloring more than the art that I enjoyed about the next Batman. But the next Batman takes off in a future, where there's the magistrate. And I'm not clear whether the magistrate is a dude, a police force, or it is the magistrate is the dude and he is called his police force magistrate also.
From what I understand, it's a private security force. It's not the police.
Okay.
And it is mostly mechanized, I would think.
Is this the peacekeepers are part of that?
I think so.
I didn't zone in so much on the magistrate as I did on the Peacekeepers.
I think the Peacekeepers are former costume heroes that have joined in that effort. Did I pick up on that correctly?
Maybe. Let me go over. I did find this on DC's website as a little discussion of this whole Future State series. Is again, we talked about the timing. All these books will be done. It's like all the books will be published in January, February, March, and then this is all over. No more Future State. That's I'm sure they'll carry some of them forward, whichever ones are most popular. But it says plot takes place in the year 2025 with Batman and Superman combating the paramilitary force known as the Magistrate that has been contracted by Gotham City's mayor, Christopher Nakano, to hunt down and eliminate any and all masked individuals in the city. The heroes fail. Batman is assumed dead, allowing the Magistrate to turn the city into a police state. Batman resurfaces but must engage in underground operations while his mantle has been assumed by an unknown successor, which is what the next Batman is his unknown successor. Spoiler alert, should we say who it is?
I know who it is.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Nobody wants to be the one that says it.
So picking up the mantle of Batman in this future state is Tim Fox, who is son.
Lucius Fox.
It's Luke Fox.
No, Tim Fox. Luke is his brother.
Oh. Yeah.
And Lucius is their father?
Lucius is their father.
Okay.
He has two sons, Luke, probably named after his dad, and Tim, who now for some reason, even though we're just meeting Tim Fox, he's like, no, call me Jace. I want to be known as Jace.
So confusing. Why would that be?
It makes me feel like it's a throwback to Jason Todd, who was one of the Robins who got killed, right? Wasn't he the Robin that got killed?
He's a Robin who got killed.
Which one was the Robin who got killed? Because there was one that they made a big deal out of. I feel like that was Jason.
They voted him out.
See, this is why Ryan, I wanted him on the show, because now he's going to be listening to this, fuming, being like, screaming, you don't know anything about Lucius Fox.
He just likes to correct us if we're wrong.
Okay, that's why, Ryan, if you're listening, that's why I invited you to come on, is to set us straight, because I knew we'd be reading some Batman stuff. So Lucius Fox is a character that you should know, Michael. He's Bruce Wayne's like tech dude, head of, I think, the tech division. Do you remember who played him in the movie?
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. That's right. So Morgan Freeman is Lucius Fox. These are his grown up children, Luke and Tim. They're not getting along because something happened to their sister.
Yeah. Tam. I think she OD'd.
It seems like because their mother is like working as a lawyer to help support the laws that outlaw vigilantes, that maybe it was a vigilante, it was some masked person, either a good guy or a bad guy, that injured her, and is what I got out of this.
I don't know. I wasn't really sure 100% what happened to her, but it sounded like I put OD'd question mark. I don't know.
It because they said you had time to talk to her before she relapsed.
Oh, maybe that's why.
And I thought when I read that to mean she was awake and then she relapsed into her coma.
Into her coma. Yeah, maybe. But I mean, the whole existence and prevalence of gangs in this particular comic I think of gangs and drugs and violence. And so it could have been either. In my head, the jump wasn't a far one to make.
Yeah. I think there's a scene where it's Luke that is arguing with the mom who's working on case law to make sure that they can keep the Peacekeepers, even though the ACLU is challenging the Peacekeepers. And he says something like, he's like, if the law can't stand up to the challenge, maybe the law is not any good. And she's like, why don't you go to the hospital and see your sister and tell me what you think about the law?
No, that makes sense. Well, but so the whole thing about the Peacekeepers is though they're there in the city, and it doesn't really matter necessarily if you are wearing a mask and you're a good guy or you're wearing a mask and you're a bad guy. They're there with like shoot on sight orders. So if you're wearing a mask, you're at risk of them trying to take you down.
So thank God COVID doesn't exist in this universe.
Oh, I know, right? We'd be donezo.
So this is the one, not to get political, Michael, that I think you referenced at the beginning of the show, has actually some like resonance with what's going on with where people may be headed is just this thirst for law and order and control, even if it comes at the loss of freedom and liberty.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I felt like this was all stuff that, you know, didn't seem dissimilar to things you're reading in the news.
Which is a very Dark Knight thing. Like, there was a very specific book called The Dark Knight that was written, I think, late 80s, early 90s by Frank Miller, where it's a future and Batman has been driven underground and like Superman is like the forces of law and order. And Batman's not supposed to be able to wear a mask anymore. And then that happened in Marvel Civil War. It seems like it's a I don't know, a metaphor that it's resonating with people for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and also too, what I will say, it was nice to just see that it was multicultural, right? Like we see a lot of the age old superheroes all are kind of just white dudes and white women. And so, you know, Tim Fox is a black guy. And so it was nice to see that too. You get a little bit of a difference in this comic than in the traditional Batman comics. So I thought that was good.
I agree. You know, yeah, agreed.
I don't know if I was supposed to keep reading. You give me these assignments and sometimes I don't do them right. But the backside of this book had a whole bunch of other characters. And we don't have to be done talking about this one yet, but actually that's where a lot of my questions came in.
Okay.
When I was gracing through the back of this, I was like, who the heck are these people?
There are two backup stories because this is a triple size book almost, and it is $7.99. So buyer, beware. You're not just going to get the Batman story though. You get a story about the Outsiders, who I don't know much about. They are, but I do know there's a comic that's always been called like Batman and the Outsiders. And in this, it seems like there's sort of this line within the city where the peacekeepers operate. And then once you're outside the city, they have no jurisdiction anymore. And so the Outsiders are literally outside the turf or the jurisdiction of these peacekeepers. And they are trying to like help rescue people who are still inside. Katana is a character, Michael, that you might remember from Suicide Squad.
No.
You see Suicide Squad?
I did see Suicide Squad. I don't remember that character. I did see the Killer Croc was in this.
Mm-hmm.
Killer
Croc. I like him.
Yep.
Well, maybe not in The Outsiders. He might have been in the second off-spin from this one.
He was. So there's a story of the Outsiders. I actually thought there was a really cool splash page there where Katana's running through the whole building, just like taking everybody out. Might not have been as impressive on your phone, but... Double page spread.
I realize I make faces over the computer that don't translate obviously into what the listeners can hear. So I added the wham 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 for you.
Yep. And then the last story in here is the story of the Arkham Knights, who I know even less about.
Okay, that's where I had so many questions. So one of those characters is named Dr. Phosphorus, who is like the man who suffered the death of a million cuts or something. I don't know. I was like, what the heck is going on here?
That's a metaphor, but he's literally on fire. Jeff, am I right? You look like you know something about this.
I had never come across that character before really? In my life.
You had such a confident look on your face. Like you like it was Final Jeopardy and you were like, oh I looked up and I'm ready to go. And then you reveal the thing and it's like a question mark.
No, I was actually flipping through the thing on my Kindle and I've kind of zoned out.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess
my zone face looks confident.
That's how you've gotten so far in life, Jeff. People are like, that guy's pretty confident. And you're like, I just wasn't paying attention.
No, it's just zoned out again.
Yep. Gliding through life on charm.
There's another character in the Arkham Knights section of this that's another big kind of blobby character.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that? Oh, is that Clayface?
Clayface.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I feel like every time I read a comic, like it takes very little deviation from like the original illustration that I like put in my brain to get me to be like, I have no idea who this character is all over again. So
the Arkham Knights Clayface. Are interesting to me because I didn't know anything about the Arkham Knights until I like literally read this story. Because the lady kind of looks like a Batman, but with armor and with a shield that's got an A and a sword. And if I'm reading it correctly and then trying to triangulate my knowledge of comic books, she's related somehow, because her last name is Arkham, to the person who founded
Insane Asylum, right?
Arkham Asylum. And in order to combat these peacekeepers, she's getting a lot of the villains who were in Arkham Asylum, and like old-timey knights, because she carries around a sword and a shield, she asks them to pledge allegiance to her in their efforts to fight these fascist peacekeepers. So there's like, I recognized Harvey Dent in there.
Yeah.
Right? You know Harvey Dent, right?
Two-Face.
Two-Face. Who played him in the movie?
Aaron Eckhart.
There you go. Aaron Eckhart.
And Tommy Lee Jones. And
Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. That's where my brain went.
I've got both of those.
Yeah, Victor Zsasz, who I always hated, because he's just a jerk.
I've heard of the character before, but I
don't know who that is.
Place exactly who he was.
He is a dude who just, beyond everything else, loves murder.
Oh, well, there you go. Oh, yeah.
He was the one from the Harley Quinn movie, right? We just talked about this.
Yes, he's in the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah.
Victor Zsasz on my to-do list.
He was the guy. He was the guy who was not the Black Mask. The other guy.
Yeah. He was the other one who was like just totally insane. Who was the one who was like the fat baby? Who's that? There's a
Mr. Dumpty.
Is it? I have no idea. There was a guy that looked like a fat baby.
Do you know anything about Mr. Dumpty, Jeff? I don't.
Aside from the nursery rhyme, no, not really.
Yeah, I would suspect that's Batman had villains like Egghead and like really goofy ones. And so there's Mr. Dumpty. I mean, there was no Calendar Man sighting.
That's too bad. So. But this feels very, it's very like Suicide Squad though, right? Like you're absolutely soliciting the bad guys, the evil guys to do something seemingly for justice or for good. So.
Except you're not going to kill them if they mess up.
True.
So three stories, $7.99. We never did come up with a scale to rate these on. That was a mistake on my part. Jeez. I got so much backed up to do on this podcast. Come on, people.
Right.
I liked the book. I'm very interested to see where Tim Fox goes as the next Batman. Less interested in the Outsiders, maybe, and then marginally interested in the Arkham Knights simply because I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would definitely pick up the story of Tim Fox. That's an interesting character. Yeah. And
there was so much introduction in this comic that like you got one sort of storyline kind of had finality with the gang, with the Bane Leto's, but you know, it could go in so many directions. And there were a lot of characters we didn't even really dig into, like Whitaker, and it was a police officer woman.
Right. Then I don't know what they're trying to get to, but that seems like that'll be a big part of the story. But I mean, actually, you know, when you think of darkness, that Batman story ended on a fairly positive note. I've never seen Batman end a story on a positive note that way in a long time.
Well, it didn't end with a real cliffhanger where you're like, I know what storyline's going to continue, but it was a little ominous. He's like saying, oh yeah, you know, it was a good day. Like something good finally happened in Gotham. And then he's walking down the steps and suddenly there's like two gang members behind him. And it's like dot, 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 you know? Dun, dun. So,
yeah, but we're not dealing with Bruce Wayne. We're not dealing with Mr. Trauma and constant brooding. And it's a different guy. So his Batman can go a different way.
I think Batman just like needs a friend
or a hug. Just a hug.
I don't know, guys. He's too. He lives in his head too much. You're right. Maybe some friends would be a good distraction.
Maybe like a book club with some wine or something.
Ooh, what a great idea!
All right.
Can you imagine book club with Batman? He'd pick all these like broody, awful stories, and you'd have to pretend like you thought they were good.
Well, only when it was his turn. If you had Batman, and you knew, and it wasn't Bruce Wayne, you knew this is Batman. We're gonna do a book club. What book would you pick out? Like a fiction book that you'd be like, Batman, you really need. This will teach you some good, you know.
I don't know. You have to get back to me on this one. It's a great question, but I need some time to do it right.
All I know is that when it's his time to pick a book, when they get back together again, everybody's going to be like, yeah, I didn't read it.
Yeah.
I didn't get to it.
I brought this Magnum bottle of wine and I'm just going to pretend. That's my role at book club.
So the last Future State book that we all read was Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman, I believe, is the furthest in the future and takes place in the year, I'm going to say I had it a minute ago and I lost it.
You know, so while you're looking for that, I feel like if this one was the furthest in the future, it didn't need to be. Like there was nothing about it that gave you any indication. It's not taking place on Earth or on any place where you'd have an indication of there being a time, a point in time.
Right. And from the dialogue, it felt very contemporary.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like, well, even the one thing that maybe you could date in it is this airport thing that happens. And that was very much like an airport we would know today. So if it was supposed to be super far into the future, who knows what airports will look like.
So this is DC Comics Presents Wonder Woman in Hell to Pay, Part 1, written by Joelle Jones, who also did the art, and colors by Jordi Belair, which I thought was... This was the book that I liked the art the best in. It was... It was stylized in a way that didn't make it look like just random comic book number 101, but also, very fitting, appropriate for the tone of the character. So I guess now knowing that the artist was also the writer maybe makes a little sense. So this takes place in 2040, and I think the reason that they pegged it to 2040 is what I'm understanding from reading in the back of the book, where it's like, here's all the other future state books coming up. There is going to be the Superman of Metropolis crossover with this Wonder Woman. And the Superman of Metropolis, I believe, is the son of the original Superman. And I forget his name. His name is something Kent, whatever. I don't know.
Evan.
Evan
seems like Kent.
Not Clark.
Seems like a Phil.
Rupert Kent.
No, it is. I'll find it as we're going through this. But I really... I think, just like there's always Batman, Wonder Woman crossovers, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman crossovers. I think there's a whole bunch of these that are going to be pegged to the year 2040 so these characters can cross over with each other. We don't know for sure exactly where the original Wonder Woman is as this book kicks off, but it is a character that I believe is created brand new for this series. And am I getting her name right? Yara Floor?
Yara.
Sounds right.
It was Yara. I mean, but here's the thing. Like,
Jeff.
Look,
Jeff's like, sure, that's all good.
I read this at like 20 minutes before we came on to record.
Okay, good. Well,
I flew through it.
The best work is done at the last minute. That's what I used to say in college.
So I felt like this Wonder Woman, she looked like a deviation from the traditional Wonder Woman. But I didn't feel, I don't know, I guess I didn't even hardly pick up on her name being mentioned or her even being a different character than just Wonder Woman.
Oh, really? Because I thought there was quite a lot of difference between her and Diana.
Yeah, I think visually, and their personalities were, but I sometimes that happens in these comics, and it wouldn't necessarily have been an indication to me that it was an actual intended different person.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, she's actually, from what I read, she's like a half-sister to Diana Prince. Same father, different mothers.
Yes. Got it. Zeus is the father. Yeah, what a player, man. That's Zeus. He gets around.
He's been doing it for like 4,000 years.
He must be really good at it.
Comes down all like as a swan or something, and you're like, hey, check out that swan.
Swan.
Good looking swan.
Of anything you could have picked to like see a swan for sure.
No, that's real. That's a real myth.
Chicks love swans.
It's a real myth.
That is real from Greek mythology. And now I'm really sad that my Kindle seems to be frozen up here, but literally Zeus did appear in the form of a swan to seduce a woman in Greek mythology.
I nothing is impossible from Greek mythology. Like I completely believe you that is true. It's just an interesting choice on his part of how to seduce a woman.
Well, it worked. Let's let our friend Wikipedia here, because there's a famous painting, Leda and the Swan, painted by Michelangelo, which is what you would expect it to be. Leda and the Swan. He appeared to her and he's like, hey, I'm a swan, and you know how
how we do it.
Let's get this going.
This is ridiculous.
He appeared to some woman, I think, as like just like some kind of shower of flower petals or something like that. He never appeared. Maybe he appeared as a dude sometimes, but mostly he's showing up as a swan, I guess. I don't remember all of his conquests, but there were a lot of them. So this Zeus is her dad. I don't recall who her mother is, but I don't know. I don't know why it struck me of her being so different than Diana. Diana tends to be like a little more regal, and I think this Yara Floor is a little bit more down in the weeds, arguing with like fairies. And has my favorite. This book had my favorite character, which is her winged Pegasus steed,
Jerry. I did like that. I mean, yeah, she definitely, from a temperament perspective, was not like the traditional Wonder Woman. She is not very patient, and she's sort of like, you know, very, she's yelling a lot and not in necessarily like battle cry mode, just like frustrated.
Yeah.
Just she more, seemed more like a teenager to me.
Yeah.
More young and brash and just
a little, you know, wild.
You know, she's like trying to kill a mythological creature to get its tooth for something. And the fairy's like, you can't poach on these lands. She's like, hey, come on, I do what I want. I'm Wonder Woman. And then, yes, I thought that was a clever touch too, Michael. You mentioned it, that when they go to the underworld, it's like a rip in the fabric of reality, and they get to, it's basically an airport.
Yeah, like they go to the reception. At the reception, there's this three-headed dog. I don't know what's that called, something in Greek mythology.
Cerberus.
Okay, mm-hmm. The Cerberus. Is no, not there a like
Cerberus? Its name is Cerberus.
Its name is Cerberus. Yeah. It's not the species. Right. It's name. Okay.
Right. Just like it. You have a cat, and its name is Gordy.
His name is Gordon Lightfoot. Thank you. Get it right. You guys aren't on those nickname terms just yet. So.
Yeah, you don't know the cat like that
yeah,
yet, Joe.
Yeah, you don't know him that way.
We're not on a first name basis.
Apparently not. But yeah, so like they go in and they're at the airport and they're at the check-in, and Cerberus is there to like guard the gates. He's the security. And what was interesting is that the little nymph or creature, what was her name? Capora?
Capiora or something like that?
Capiora. She's like kind of guiding Wonder Woman through this airport. And the airport represents limbo, but she's like, and there's like just basically like dead people everywhere waiting to get ushered on planes or, you know, via different gateways to their final destination. But she said that this limbo, this sort of transitionary place, it's different for everyone. So apparently Wonder Woman's idea of hell or the way to get to hell is to be in the airport. And I can kind of relate to that. I've been in plenty of airports in my day. So I thought that was witty. I liked that a lot. It was good.
I like that she was thwarted by a turnstile.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I can't get through this turnstile.
Okay, but like you can't relate. It's happened to all of us, right?
Of
where
course.
You're like going full force trying to just get where you got to go and that thing locks up. Mother, that makes me mad.
That is awful. That's not cool. So out of these three books, which one would you read the second issue of?
I probably wouldn't read the Flash one. I'm sorry, Jeff. I know you love the Flash. I do,
but I'm with you.
Yeah, I wasn't super into that one. I would read the Batman one. I'd like to know what happens with the Fox version of Batman. And the Wonder Woman one, I actually feel like it wasn't a short episode, but we actually didn't really learn too much of anything. We know she's trying to get to hell to rescue her sister. But that's it. That's kind of all we know. Like the whole episode was just a setup and like a battle scene with the Hydra in the beginning and this airport thing happening. So I got like very, very little from the story, but I'm curious. And I thought that the way that it was written was fun and quirky and cute. So I would keep reading that one.
Did she say her sister was Diana, that she was going to rescue from the underworld?
I don't think she did.
Because we just, and I didn't, you know, I'm putting two and two together now, is that the intro to this that I just looked up before we started was in the Dark Knight's death metal, Diana was ruler of the underworld. So maybe she's going to rescue her from the underworld now. Maybe.
Whoa.
We will stay tuned and see. Jeff, you going to read any more of these?
If I were to read any more of them, I would probably go with the next Batman, because I'm interested to see what this take on Batman becomes. I'm interested in finding out how he got into the role.
The suit fit. Yeah. It's like Johnny Bravo.
Apparently.
It's like Johnny Bravo, the jacket fit.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm fascinated by him. I'm intrigued. The Flash... okay, it was interesting, it was good, but it felt like any other Flash story, so I didn't feel like there's anything very special about it. And with Wonder Woman, I feel like not necessarily written for me, being an older guy. I think young girls would absolutely love this character and really get into it, and more power to you. Enjoy the book. But if I were to follow any of them, I think it would be the next Batman.
Not the Flash.
What about you, Joe?
You know, I'm probably more into comics than both of you. I think the one that I liked best of the three was Wonder Woman. And maybe it's just Jeff, me being a little more familiar and reading comics a little more frequently, that I'm kind of ready for a switch up. And this being a new Wonder Woman type character with a very different personality, was very appealing to me. And I really did think the art was pretty spectacular on the book. I will probably pick up the next Batman as well. And Flash was just kind of like, little too much for me. Although there's only one more. So it's like, maybe I should just read it and see how it ends.
Just be done with it.
That's the interesting thing they're doing with, this future state is these stories are only like 2 to 4 issues long. So that's how they're getting people hooked. I'm going to run down for you now the list of the other titles in the DC future state. And you can tell me if you're interested to pick up knowing where this is going. And some of them take place near future, like the Batman and Superman stuff seems like it's near future. There's this mid future with like the next Wonder Woman. And some of them are far future that are like really weird. It seems like the Swamp Things. The Swamp Thing takes place in the year 4500. And basically it seems like the Swamp Thing is now the ruler of the world and most people are gone.
Yeah. Just because it's
weird.
Just because it's 40-year climate change, right?
No, it's climate change, and we all killed ourselves off by killing the planet. Swamp Thing just hangs out by himself.
So get a load of this list, because this is where probably where Ryan was like, "Forget it, I can't read these." Which is there's a future state Aquaman, which I believe is set at the same time period as Wonder Woman. It's like it's the next Aquaman. There's gonna be Batman Superman, which I think are the Batman Superman of the current sort of Batman Superman. I think. Future State Catwoman. It's on 3. Somebody keep count. I'm going to run out of fingers because I'm holding my microphone.
I look like I'm throwing gangs up.
Yes, you do.
There's Future State Dark Detective, which is the Bruce Wayne Batman. Future State The Flash. Green Lantern. Harley Quinn. House of L, which is only one. There's not like a whole series. It's just one issue. Immortal Wonder Woman. Which I think is the other Wonder Woman, not the one we just read. Justice League, Kara Zor-El, Superwoman, Legion of Superheroes, Nightwing, Robin Eternal, Shazam, Suicide Squad, Superman Worlds of War, Superman Wonder Woman, Superman and Metropolis, Superman versus Imperious Lex, Swamp Thing, Teen Titans, The Next Batman, and Wonder Woman.
That's those 24. Are
all the series, so 24 series. Each one
I ran out of fingers.
Jeff quit.
it looks like other than House of L, which is only one issue, most of these are just 2 issues. Like this Wonder Woman is only 2 issues, except the next Batman is 4 issues. Superman versus Imperious Lex is 3 issues and Dark Detective is 4 issues. Everything else is just 2 issues. So you can read the whole story in just 2 comics.
Bing, bang, yeah. Boom. Yeah.
Well, they did note that the 2 supporting features in the next Batman were continuing in issue 3.
Issue 3 so, of Dark. No.
So the next Batman. I don't know. It could be just a Batman story or it could have some different features in it.
That is true. They could finish the Tim Fox story in number 2 and then jump ahead to number 3 with these other clowns, the outsiders. is that where Arkham continued also?
As in yes.
Batman 3? All right.
Yep.
All right. So that's DC's future state. Maybe we'll pick a couple and read a couple more. We shall.
Let's do it.
We'll see what the critical response is to this episode of how many people want and then how mad Ryan gets at our description of Batman type things.
He'll be all
and
right.
And whether he'll join us to actually discuss them.
I mean, yeah, you might have ticked Ryan. Him off enough that he will. Who knows?
Ryan, I don't know you, but jump in, please.
Ryan's our you're our Flash expert, but Ryan's our real Batman expert because he still reads all the he still reads the main Batman titles and has for years and years and years. So that's DC's future state. Do we want to talk about WandaVision?
I feel like it. I mean, it came out pretty recently, right?
It just did.
Friday.
Oh, it did. I didn't know when it came out. I watched both of the ones that came out. I say, let's go for it.
All right. Because I do want to read some more Vision and Scarlet Witch comics. And we will know this time not to invite Mark. He wasn't a big
Mark
fan.
Mark does not like the Wanda or the Super or
like,
the Vision.
We're like, Mark, you want to come on and talk about Scarlet Witch and Vision? He's like, sure. And then we're like, at the end of it, he's like, I never like these characters. It's like, oh, all righty then. That was, we invited the wrong Marvel super fan. It was all good. But so WandaVision just premiered on Disney Plus this last week and 2 episodes hit. And just early thoughts. What'd you think?
I, I don't know yet. I don't know 100% what's going on. Because there's like all these little, I'm going to call them Easter eggs, but like all these little hints at there being, you know, a bigger story that's going to unfold. But there was a lot of setup in these first two episodes. So it's like, starts off, it's all black and white, very I Dream of Jeannie, the Vision and the Scarlet Witch are living in the burbs, very much like that comic that we read.
Right.
Where they're, you know, just building a home and, you know, he has a job and there's like, they're telling these quippy jokes and there's a laugh track in the background. And I wanted to ask a couple of questions and see if this is something that was real or if I was just, you know, making them up. But does it feel like time progressed between episode one and episode two?
Absolutely.
Okay. They're living in different decades. Because I noticed their house changed and I was like, wait, why did the house change? Yes. And then I was like, wait. And then we were talking about, oh, the clothes kind of changed too. So there's something trippy that's sort of happening that I don't know that I totally understand yet.
It's like each episode is a different classic sitcom. So they're progressing.
Almost like a different decade.
Yeah. They're progressing through time. So first is
50s.
Any of a variety of 50s sitcoms.
Ozzie and Harriet.
You know, I Married Joan, whatever. And then you switch to Bewitched in episode two.
Which is very obvious because of the credit sequence. It was a Bewitched homage.
Yes.
And yeah, I didn't watch all these shows growing up. So some of this was lost on me. Like I was like, I know I'd seen enough of them to know what was going on roughly. But if you were young, like much younger than I am watching it, that probably would have, I mean, it would have gone totally over your head.
I think they'll catch up to you because from the trailer, it looks like they eventually get into Brady Bunch territory. And it looks like from the trailer that they're progressing through time. This was interesting to me because it's the first Marvel TV show I watched that really felt like a TV show instead of like mini movies. Like the Netflix, like with Daredevil and Iron Fist, felt like they were just kind of movies they're trying to break into smaller chunks. This one doesn't seem like that.
They're episodic.
This is, I mean, there are a few times, and Jeff, I'm a big Marvel guy. I know you're a big DC guy. There's once or twice, in my life where I've seen a Marvel thing on the screen and like got a little choked up, a little teary because something that was like in my head is so well represented on screen. I'm like, I just must like, there must be so many people who are like living the same visions I have in my head because, and that's like WandaVision was it for me. Like these were my favorite characters in Marvel history. And I read their mini series over and over and over. And this was like, oh my gosh, it was like skies parted and God was smiling down on me. And it's like, this is what you've been waiting for.
Yeah, exactly. Which God did I please? Right.
Right.
I can imagine what that would feel like. Finally seeing the characters that you love being given the story that you've loved forever.
Well, what's amazing is this isn't the exact story, but I can see the story and they're telling it in the exact right way. It was never told this way in a comic book ever before, but I can see the seeds that are being planted all along the way that will get to that story in a new way that stays really faithful to these characters in a way that just makes me so happy.
And see, I'm watching it. I come in and it's all surface. All I'm seeing is the sitcom and I'm not picking up on the Marvelness of it because I don't know all of the Easter eggs that are happening, but I am researching them and I'm going online and I am finding out. And as I find out more and more, I'm like, oh man, bring it. Let's see what happens because this is going to blow up and it's going to be awesome. Yeah.
So the first episode, and you know, it came out a week ago. I'm sure we can talk about, and the episodes are only like 30 minutes each. Easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode ends though, Michael, it's like a whole sitcom the whole way. And then it ends and it zooms out to show that the sitcom is on a TV and there's somebody sitting there taking notes.
Yeah.
What did you take out of that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, it felt like maybe that means there's someone behind the scenes pulling the levers and making everything happen, right? Like there's someone in control that the characters maybe don't know about.
If it helps, the notebook the person had notably had a sword logo on it. And I think we talked about this with Pat a long time ago. There's S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel Universe, but what they have not really talked about in the Marvel Universe in the movies is S.W.O.R.D., which is S.H.I.E.L.D. takes care of everything on Earth. S.W.O.R.D. takes care of everything outside of Earth, like in space or weird interdimensional stuff.
And the movies have started touching on S.W.O.R.D.
Okay.
Like got in post-credit scenes.
So
Got it.
There's something going on there. I don't want to spoil too much for people who maybe haven't read the comics, but I think we touched on it on one of our prior issues or one of our prior episodes of where the Vision and Scarlet Witch, where their relationship goes and how that impacts the broader universe. And so, I mean, baseline, she has reality altering powers. You've seen that in the movies so far.
Yep.
You've only touched on the actual extent of her powers, though. There's like, Marvel did a really interesting thing on Disney Plus. You can go watch Marvel Legends, where they take like little clips. And so for Wanda Maximoff, it's like 7 minutes and it's clips they've strung together from the movies to kind of give you her story so far.
Okay.
And you see she gradually gets more and more powerful as the movies go, but you don't still really, I mean, in Avengers Endgame, she almost defeated Thanos by herself.
Right.
Even though he had the Infinity Gems. Mm-hmm. They've only really touched on the extent because she fundamentally can alter reality, and she is in a mental state right now where the love of her life, the Vision from the movies, has been murdered and killed in the Avengers movie, and he did not come back at the end of Avengers Endgame. He was one of those that didn't come back.
He wasn't one of the ones.
He wasn't part of the snap. Thanos killed him prior to that. So there's something going on with this person who can alter reality, who is suffering a mental crisis because her love is dead, and she's imagining their marriage in a way that is like really bizarre. And you can see there's something going on behind the scenes where in the second episode, it's on the radio. It's like, Wanda, who's doing this to you? Who's doing this to you?
Right.
Someone's yelling through the static on the radio over and over and over again. Well, and in the first one, she has a break. There's like that mental pause or break in the first one too, when the boss, they have their bosses, the boss over for dinner.
Right.
The boss is choking, and there's sort of like this hiccup in the story where there's a lot of repetition where you can tell that she's having a moment. So you know that something's going on, but again, without a lot of the backstory, and even though I read that one, you know, those comics with you, and I've seen, you know, the Marvel movies, I don't know a ton about the character. So for me, piecing together all of these things, I'm more in like the Jeff camp. Like I've got to do some Googling or just kind of like use my creativity to try to figure out what's happening.
I believe it was a recent interview where Kevin Feige acknowledged that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, she is the most powerful character there is. And the next movie she will appear in is a movie with Doctor Strange. The next Doctor Strange movie, they've already announced that Scarlet Witch will co-star in the movie. And the movie is called Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
And it's going to be straight up horror.
They've said it's going to be a straight up horror movie. And this WandaVision series leads directly into it.
Nice. I always liked the Doctor Strange movies. So, and that makes sense because there's like some trippy stuff that goes on in the Doctor Strange stuff, right? Like,
Did you ever see the movie Inception?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Imagine that on acid. And that's where you go with Wanda Maximoff's powers.
We were talking about acid a lot today. okay.
At one point in the Marvel comics, because mutants were just everywhere, there is a storyline in the Marvel comics that Mark and I have referenced when we talked before called House of M, where somebody manipulates her into having a mental breakdown, and there's the war between the mutants and humans, and she just says, no more mutants. And it fractures the world in an alternate reality where mutants don't exist.
Ooh, crazy.
Which is also how the mutants could be introduced into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. Because so far, now that Disney bought Fox, the big question is, how are they going to bring the X-Men into this whole universe and explain why all this stuff has been going on and the X-Men haven't ever been around? Maybe.
Or the Fantastic Four.
Right. Maybe there's this multiverse that's fractured now that needs to be brought together. I don't know. There's
so much to unpack on that.
I'm so excited.
It is exciting. I mean, the thing is, too, for me, like, there's still so much I don't know about all of this. So
that's why we're
here. The possibilities are endless.
That's why we're here on this podcast. Yeah, you're not absolutely. The only one who doesn't know. But
I'm not alone.
Oh, yeah. No, not by a long shot. And I get the feeling that starting with episode 3, things are starting to crack open even more. And I think we're going to get some really interesting developments
in the
next episode.
Again, if somebody's listening, there's spoilers in this conversation, but there is the ending of episode 2 where she finds out she's pregnant, and then they go outside, there's something traumatic out there, and it rewinds, and then they relive the same moment, and the traumatic event never happens.
Right. Don't you wish that's how it could really work?
That's
no kidding.
That'll be February 1st, Michael. I'm going to rewind and erase everything bad that happened during January.
Dry January is doing you well. You're just, you know, maybe more aware of all the crap that happens when you're in a state of sobriety.
Well, we should end on the, we usually end on the beverage we're drinking.
Yeah.
And since we're doing dry January, Jeff, you have the classic there, which is, what are you drinking there?
That is the only thing for me, Diet Pepsi.
Out of a Pepsi glass and everything.
Do you want to do a jingle, Jeff? We can do a little free advertising.
No, I better not. I better not.
Okay. And Michael, you and I, you found this beverage for me to help me get through the dry January, which is sparkling hop tea from Hoplark, which I think they're in Colorado. Am I correct?
They're in Boulder. They have a brewery in Boulder. Yeah.
And I'll just crib right off their label. Tea brewed like craft beer. Now more than ever, taking a moment of calm is actually the most important thing we do. Crack the can, chill out, and find your zen. So yes. I have the calm one because I don't drink any caffeine. I ordered the 12 pack of samplers of, they have the caffeine free versions, but this tea tastes like a hopped, like IPA.
It does. I know. It's amazing. I've been drinking these for a couple of years now. I must have gotten hip to them a couple dry Januaries ago. But I really like the really, there's one called the really hoppy one. And then the one I'm drinking now, which is, I think it's somewhat newer, is called the Citra Bomb one. These ones both have a little bit of caffeine in them, but they taste just like drinking an IPA. So it's super tasty, but no carbs, no caffeine or little caffeine, no calories, no alcohol.
Zero sugar, zero calories, 0.0% alcohol. Not even like a half a percent, 0.0, it says on the label.
That's right.
All right. So
they come up, they have a lot. They actually, if, for anyone listening who's interested in this, they actually have a ton of different flavors.
I'm cutting this
out. I don't know these people. I'm just a fan and I want to spread the love, but they have a bunch of different flavors. So,
okay.
Check it out.
I will send them a note on social media saying we mentioned them. And if they continue to send us free samples, we will review them on the podcast and promote them more heavily. But
sounds great.
Ain't nobody getting no promos for free starting now.
All right, Joe. All right.
All right. Well, that wraps us up for another episode. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Jeff, for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
With our non-alcoholic beverages.
Cheers.
Clink, clink. Good episode.
And cheers, everybody. And cheers, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on the Casual Comics Cast. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd appreciate you taking a moment to rate us in your favorite podcast app or two. And if you have any feedback or something you'd like to hear us discuss, we're at casualcomicsguy@gmail.com, as well as on Twitter @casualcomicsguy. See you soon!